Good morning and welcome to the Narrow Path radio broadcast. My name is Steve Gregg and we're live for a half hour each weekday morning with an open phone line to invite you to call in if you have questions about the Bible or about the Christian faith and you'd like to bring those up and discuss them. Maybe they'll get answered. Who knows? If you have a different viewpoint than that of the host on any point, feel free to call and we'll talk about that as well. Maybe you're not a Christian at all, and maybe you even are, we might say, hostile toward Christianity. Maybe you object to Christianity, object to the Bible, or something in it. Feel free to call. I'd love to talk to you about such things. So you don't have to be a Christian to call. In fact, we'd urge you to call if you're not, but if you are a Christian, you can call with questions or with disagreements. The only limitation is that you have to call within this half hour, and that goes by very quickly. So let me give you the phone number. Our lines are open at the moment. The number is 800-227-5278. That's 800-227-5278. And if you call now, you will get on. If you wait in 10, 15 minutes, you never know. You might not. Depends on how full the lines get. But you can get on today if you call now. 800-227-5278. And as I've been saying all month, this month is unique for us in that we're on these stations in the morning and in the afternoon, live. 2 o'clock in the afternoon is the afternoon slot, but the morning program is going to be discontinued at the first of the year. So only now, only the next week or so, can you listen in the morning and in the afternoon on these stations. Now, of course, both programs have been on our internet site for forever, and we have years of broadcasts going back on the archives. You can listen to 10 programs a week on the archives if you wish. But on the radio, we will only be on at 2 o'clock in the afternoon after the first of the year. But that's hopefully that's okay, and most of the people who've contacted me have said that works out fine for them. Some say it even works out better than the morning hour, half hour, excuse me. So feel free to join us and make a habit of listening in the afternoon at 2 o'clock this afternoon and every weekday. Now, on Thursday mornings, early in the morning, and that's tomorrow, I teach a Bible study in Temecula on the life of Christ, life and teachings of Christ. We're taking a harmony of all four Gospels in detail. It's a wonderful study, wonderful subject matter, and we invite anyone who wishes to join us at 6:30 on Thursday mornings. 6:30 each Thursday morning, including this week, although Christmas is this week. That doesn't interrupt our Thursday morning schedule. Tomorrow morning, 6:30 at Panera Bread in Temecula. That's at Panera Bread restaurant in Temecula. 6:30 Thursday mornings, including tomorrow. Let's talk to Derek from Fontana, California, first of all today. Derek, welcome to the Narrow Path. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I would like to prefix my question, if I may. It's about the image and likeness of God. Okay. I believe it's the spirit that God gave to man, his righteousness, his holiness, and his glory. But since he succumbed to the devil, his spirit died, and the righteousness and glory and holiness left him. So between Adam and Jesus, they don't have the spirit of God, but the consensus is that they do. What's your take on that?
You say the consensus is that they do?
Yeah, the majority of the people believe we're made in the image and likeness of God, the unbelievers. And the Bible doesn't uphold that.
So you're saying that people who are not Christians are not themselves made in the image of God?
Yes, not themselves in the image and likeness of God. Their spirit is dead. They don't have the glory. They don't have the righteousness or the holiness.
Well, you have defined the image of God within certain limits. You've talked about it as his righteousness, his glory, his holiness, and so forth. I'm not sure that is a biblical way of defining the image of God that he created in Adam and Eve. For example, we don't have any reference at all to them having shared in the glory of God, though they might have. They were righteous, it is true, and holy, because there was no sin yet in the world. You're right. But to say that these and these alone comprise the image of God, and man may be placing too narrow a limit upon the whole category, because we bear the image of God, even unbelievers, I think, do, in other ways as well. I don't believe the image of God is necessarily a physical likeness, of course, but I do believe that animals and man differ from each other in this very thing. That is to say that God made all the animals before he made man, and after he'd made the animals, he said, let us make man in our own image. So it would appear that humans were made distinct from the animals in the image of God, and perhaps in the ways that you mentioned, but not only in those ways. Man differs from the animals in other ways too. For example, man is a rational being that can contemplate and philosophize and think about meaning and so forth, which animals, I'm sure, do not. Think about the meaning of life and so forth. We're thinkers. We're rational, logical thinkers. Of course, some people have diminished their capacity in this area through bad education or bad management of their brain cells. But the truth is, it's a part of human nature to be a thinking self. And that is no doubt part of the image of God, since it distinguishes man from the animals. Also, humans are creative and have free will. Humans don't simply act by instinct like animals do, but humans have free will. They can choose to do good or bad. And this is true even of non-Christians. Likewise, as I said, we're creative. God is creative. Animals are not creative. We are. Therefore, we create. Pardon?
Doesn't it say in different places that God says, I do not think like you or act like you?
Yes, it says that God's thoughts are higher, as high as the heavens are above the earth. His thoughts are higher than our thoughts. However, he recognizes that we have thoughts, and animals do not. God has superior thoughts. To say man is made in God's image doesn't mean that man is on God's level. If a man makes a statue of himself in his own image, that doesn't mean the statue has the same status that the man himself has. But God has made creatures who share with him in some of his characteristics, which are not shared by the animal kingdom. And what I'm saying is the ability to make free choices, the ability to think rationally, the ability to create music, create inventions, create pictures, create stories. I mean, humans are creative, animals are not. And these are some of the things that are part of God's nature, which he apparently has placed in man as a part of the nature of God or the character or image of God. And so yes, you're right. I mean, man has ceased to be righteous and holy and has lost, in a sense, that aspect of God's image. In fact, when I think that this is how Satan deceived man, because he said to Adam and Eve, if you eat that fruit, you will be like God, knowing good and evil. Well, he was correct. They were like God, knowing good and evil, but they were less like him in more important ways, as you pointed out. They're less like him in righteousness and holiness, and therefore they lost something of their likeness to God. But they didn't lose everything of their likeness to God, because, in fact, it says in Genesis 3 that God says, look, man has become like one of us, knowing good and evil. So there is a sense in which man bears similarities to God, even though he has lost some of the innocence that he once had when he was created. So I think all human beings are, in a sense, to be treated as if they are, made in God's image as opposed to animals. Humans have, therefore, a higher dignity in their, existential nature than animals have. And that's why there are human rights and there aren't animal rights. You know, it says in James 3:9, it says, with our mouths we bless God, the Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the similitude or likeness of God. So he says, out of the same mouth proceed blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not so to be. James says that we should not curse people because they're made in the image of God. And he's not distinguishing between Christian and non-Christian people. People are made in the image of God, and cursing them is wrong because of
that. Isn't similitude similar? And not likeness?
Similitude means a likeness or similar. Yeah, similarity. Likeness means the same thing. Likeness means like him. Similar to or like him. Or the words similar and like are pretty much interchangeable. The likeness of God is similarity to God. Yeah.
Okay, very good, Steve. Have a good day.
Thank you, Derek. Good to hear from you. And Derek's line is now open for you if you'd like to join us. The number is 800-227-5278. Kevin from Burbank, California, welcome to The Narrow Path. Thanks for calling.
Thanks, bro. I'll be quick. 2 Corinthians 11:4. Can you help us understand when we might be going out and preaching the gospel where it would be another Jesus?
Well, yeah, Paul expresses a concern that false teachers might lead the Corinthians to accept what he calls another Jesus. He says, for if he who comes preaches another Jesus whom we have not preached, or if you receive a different spirit which you have not received, or a different gospel which you have not accepted, you might well put up with it. He's alarmed that they might well put up with it. And, what would he mean by another Jesus? Probably he means a misrepresentation of Jesus in some important features. In other words, there's many people in the world named Jesus. There were in Paul's day. It was a very common Jewish name. It's a very common name, for example, among Hispanics today, too. And so there's many Jesuses. But when Paul says preaching another Jesus, he doesn't mean somebody else other than Jesus of Nazareth. He means Jesus of Nazareth misrepresented as something other than who he is. And because I don't think there are other people teaching other Jesuses other than Jesus of Nazareth, it's that the false teachers misrepresented Jesus of Nazareth as something that he was not. Now, we don't know what kind of misrepresentation was happening with the Corinthians, but we know in 2 Corinthians in general, he warns them often about false teachers, some of whom seem to be Jews, because he actually says, are they Israelites? I am even more than they are. And he basically, in the same chapter, in verse 22, he says, are they Hebrews? So am I. Are they Israelites? So am I. Are they the seed of Abraham? So am I. In other words, he's talking about false teachers who happen to be Jewish, and we probably would be safe in assuming they're Judaizers, like those that Paul was concerned about when he wrote Galatians. That would mean that the other Jesus would be a Jesus who's representing something other than what the true historical Jesus represented. And if he's thinking of the Judaizers, which is very likely, it would be a better way to put it, the case, then he would say the Judaizers are misrepresenting Jesus, either in that they were presenting Jesus as if he had taught a continuation of the old covenant perpetually, which would be a misrepresentation of Jesus because Jesus said in the upper room there's a new covenant. And the writer of Hebrews makes it very clear when he talks about a new covenant, it makes the old covenant obsolete, he says, in Hebrews 8:13. So Jesus did not teach the perpetuity of the old covenant. And therefore, that may be the misrepresentation of Jesus that they're talking about, a Jesus who teaches a different, as it were, a different religion, a different religious system than what Christianity really is. Or they might have been simply representing Jesus as one who is for the Jews mainly, and a Gentile might have to become a Jew by being circumcised to be Christian, which makes Jesus not the international Savior, but the Savior of the Jews only. It's hard to know exactly what these Jewish teachers were teaching that alarmed Paul so much. But obviously, if he's saying they're teaching another Jesus, he doesn't mean that there's another guy named Jesus besides Jesus of Nazareth that they've decided to advocate instead of him, but rather they're talking about the same Jesus the Christians are talking about, but painting him in very different colors and making him a very different kind of person and teaching very different kinds of things than what the real Jesus taught. Now, how would we be guilty of that? Well, we could be, obviously, if we misrepresent what Jesus said and taught and what he was. And therefore, it's incumbent on anyone who would preach Jesus, first of all, that we know Jesus We must know him. We must know him as he is so that we can represent him as he is. And that would be the concern I think Paul would have in that case and how it would extrapolate to our own situation.
Can I ask you just a quick question similar to this? If Jesus told the Samaritan woman that the proper place to worship was in spirit and truthfulness, if I then say that the proper place to worship is in Jerusalem, would that be another Jesus?
It would be certainly a misrepresentation of the teaching of Jesus. And if it was a deliberate misrepresentation, it would be an act of heresy, you know. There are people perhaps who, obviously there would be Christians who've never read the Gospel of John and never read that Jesus said that particular thing and might be mistaken as to whether he thought that Jerusalem was a necessary center for worship or not, in which case they're still preaching an untruth. They might be doing so innocently enough. But teaching, untruth about Jesus is harmful, whether it's being done innocently or deviously. Obviously, we are obligated to know what Jesus said insofar as his teachings are available to us. And, yes, if someone, in spite of the fact that Jesus said that the hour is coming, and now is when they will not in this mountain or in Jerusalem worship the Father, but those who worship the Father will worship in spirit and in truth. If somebody takes that and says, no, Jerusalem has got to be the worship center. We're going to have a temple and sacrifices, and Jesus wants us to worship there in that location. I think that'd be a misrepresentation of what Jesus said. In a sense, a different Jesus. Now, but I'm not sure exactly whether Paul means a different Jesus in the sense that it's so far removed from the way Jesus was that you're not even saved anymore. Obviously, there's no safety in preaching the wrong Jesus. That is, we can't be secure if we're teaching a Jesus that doesn't resemble the real Jesus. But there may be ways in which we are mistaken about Jesus that are not fatal, that is, fatal to our souls. Nonetheless, that shouldn't make us lazy about making sure we know Jesus properly, because it's the real Jesus, the way he lived and represented himself and taught, that the world needs to know and that we're commissioned to preach.
Thank you, brother.
All right, Kevin, good talking to you. Thank you for joining us today. Philip from San Diego is our next caller, and if you'd like to join us, the number is 800-227-5278. That's 800-227-5278. Philip, welcome to the Narrow Path. Thanks for calling.
Hello, sir. Yeah, I heard a preacher recently say that the Gospel of John is the only gospel that does not record the episode on the Mount of Transfiguration. But
true.
John was there. Yeah. In other words, John was at the Mount of Transfiguration, but he does not record it. Why do you think John did not record
it? Why do I think John did not record it?
Yeah, even though he was there.
Well, John was there to see many things that he didn't record. I believe that the Gospel of John was written with a deliberate intention to supplement the other Gospels. The other three Gospels, I believe, had been in circulation for some time before John wrote his Gospel. And traditionally, John wrote it very late in his life after the other apostles were dead. And that it would appear that the Church of Ephesus, where John spent his final years, was aware that John had many memories about Christ, which had not been included in the other three Gospels. The other three Gospels, as you know, parallel each other a great deal. There's an awful lot of shared material between them, among themselves. But there's not very much shared material between the Gospel of John and those other three. For example, none of the sermons in Matthew or Mark or Luke can be found in John. And none of the sermons found in John can be found in Matthew, Mark, or Luke. There's only one miracle of Jesus that's found in all four Gospels, and that's the feeding of the 5,000. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John all record that miracle, but apart from that and the resurrection of Jesus, there are no miracles that are recorded in all the Gospels, though there are several that are recorded by three of them, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, but which John does not include. And John records six miracles that are not found in the other Gospels. And so, in fact, the other Gospels have Jesus continually telling parables and casting out demons. In John, there's no exorcisms and there's no parables. So, in other words, John's gospel does not overlap the others very much. Now, this is either, there's two ways to look at this. There's the skeptic's way. They say, well, those three gospels give a more accurate picture of Jesus, and John's gospel is so different. It just isn't reliable. It doesn't give the same picture of Jesus at all. And then there's the non-skeptic view, or the view of somebody who's reasonable, I would say, who'd say, well, since John is deliberately avoiding repeating what's in the other Gospels, it must be that he felt that he should write something to supplement them and not to duplicate them. And why he duplicates the one miracle of the feeding of the 5,000, I don't know. But that's the only miracle of Jesus that's found in John that's also in the other Gospels. And, you know, again, there's no overlapping of the teachings in John and the other Gospels. It's clear that John is giving different stories, different sermons about Jesus than the others gave. And that would perhaps explain why he didn't give the Mount of Transfiguration. Matthew, Mark, and Luke all recorded it in some detail. There's no reason for John to record it again. You know, writing was an expensive proposition. Parchment was not cheap. Ink was not cheap. And therefore, to simply duplicate what other authors had done was to place a tremendous amount of effort and expense into an enterprise that's a duplication of effort and redundant. So, for the most part, John simply doesn't bother to do that. And that's no doubt the reason he didn't tell the story of the Transfiguration, although he saw it. Frankly, if you read, about the healing of the paralyzed man lowered through the roof in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, John was there too, but he doesn't record that in his gospel either. In fact, he doesn't record the baptism of Jesus, which Matthew, Mark, and Luke do. And yet he apparently saw it. There's many things that Matthew, Mark, and Luke record, which John observed, but which he did not include them in his gospel. He didn't need
so
to.
You think John
it had been done. What's that?
Do you think John was aware of the other three Gospels, what they said, what they were, you know, what was in them at the time when he wrote his?
They all three were in existence before he wrote his, but whether he had seen them all, I don't know. It's unlikely that he had seen none of them. In other words, he probably had seen at least one of them, if not two or three. They were in circulation, and he was an apostle, so he would be probably in the position to be seeing and aware of the principal Christian writings that were circulating. So I think it's probable he had seen all three Gospels, but if he had not, even if he'd seen only one of them or two of them, he would thereby know that those things were recorded in them that were, and would know that, you know, he had some recollections that needed to be written down before he died, or else they would die with him.
Thank you.
All right, Philip, good talking to you. Thanks for your call. You're listening to the Narrow Path radio broadcast. We probably don't have time to take another call because you can try 800-227-5278 if you want to just have about a minute or so. But we are very much near the end of the program. But I want to remind you that we broadcast again live, and therefore it'll be not the same program. It'll be different calls, different time of day, different people. Maybe you, this afternoon at 2 o'clock. I hope you will get in the habit of listening to The Narrow Path at 2 o'clock each weekday afternoon, because if you've been in the habit of listening in the morning, that will be discontinuing. The morning show will be discontinuing at the first of the year, and we will only be on at 2 o'clock. So form the habit now, and we're on both times during this month. And The Narrow Path, of course, has a website by the same name, thenarrowpath.com. This website is loaded with resources, including archives of every radio program that a few of them have been lost for some reason. I don't know what happened to them, but not very many. There are thousands of radio programs going back to many years in our archives. And there's probably about 900 lectures of mine teaching verse by verse through the Bible and teaching in detail on many Christian topics. I just got an email today from Germany from a man who said that he's listening to my topical lectures and it's made a big change in his life. I got an email today also from an acquaintance I've never met face-to-face, but we've corresponded by email, who's the president of a Bible college and seminary in Indiana. And he said he's listening to every one of my verse-by-verse lectures. He's been doing it for 18 months. He says he listens to me for 2 hours a day. And he's going through the whole Bible with me, and he's the president of a seminary. So, there are people out there who find these lectures useful, and they are free. You don't have to buy them. You just listen to them. You can download them. You can have them. The website is thenarrowpath.com. Don from Upland, I don't know if we have enough time for your call. Maybe we can try. Hello, Don.
And the other is in Matthew 24, Christ talks about whether or not when he warns them of the tribulation, he said, pray that it won't be in the winter, pray that such and such. My question is, did Christ not know when these things were going to happen?
Jesus didn't know the future unless the Father revealed it to him. Remember, later in that same discourse, he says that no one knows the day or the hour, even the Son, meaning himself, does not know. He says, only my Father knows. So he didn't know what day it would be. And so he said, pray that it won't be in the winter or on the Sabbath, both of which would be very inconvenient times for trying to escape from the city, because he's talking about fleeing to the mountains. Winter time would be particularly an uncomfortable and difficult time to do so. And the Sabbath would be a difficult time, too, because the gates of the city would be shut and no business is done. You can't pick up supplies. And so he says, pray that it's not at one of these inconvenient times, because you're going to have to really get out there and get out of town, because the town's about to fall. And it did. It did in 70 AD. I appreciate your call and all the calls today. You've been listening to The Narrow Path radio broadcast. We are a listener-supported ministry. We pay for the time on the radio stations. And that money comes from people like you, or it doesn't come at all. If you'd like to help us stay on the air, you can write to The Narrow Path, P.O. Box 1730, Temecula, California. That's Temecula, California, 92593. Or you can donate from the website if you choose. That is thenarrowpath.com. Have a great day, and we will talk again this afternoon or tomorrow morning, as the case may be. God bless you.
The views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of KBRT, its ownership, its management, or its sponsors.
And thank you for listening to The Narrow Path with Steve Gregg. I'd like to echo what he said. Remember, he is on the air because of the support of listeners like you. And if you've been blessed by Steve Gregg's answers, and he's got a lot of answers for a lot of questions to Scripture and the faith, and they're always great and in-depth, this is a ministry worth getting behind, because a lot of people do call the program. And just in case you didn't know, The Narrow Path has moved to 2 o'clock. Steve will be on again today at 2 p.m., and at the beginning of the year, he will only be on at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So to learn more, make sure you visit the website, thenarrowpath.com, and to give, you can give on thenarrowpath.com. And stay with us. Enjoying Everyday Life with Joyce Meyer is coming up next. I'm Rob Newton.
If you or anyone you know has been in an accident, a personal injury attorney is a vital resource. We can introduce you to one of the best at the Adline, 800-227-2337.
Strengthening the local body of Christ. This is KBRT and KBRT HD Costa Mesa, KNSN San Diego, 100.7 in Corona, and San Diego's 103.3.
Welcome to Enjoying Everyday Life with New York Times bestselling author Joyce Meyer. On today's program, Joyce will be teaching from her series entitled Living on Purpose for a Purpose. You only get one life. What are you doing with yours? Many times it's easy to lose focus and lose sight of God's plan. In this series, Joyce will be sharing on how to bring peace and joy to your everyday busy life. From personal experience, she wants to encourage you to overcome adversity and seize every opportunity. It's true, life can be hectic, but you can learn simple ways to make each day count and take charge of your life. But before she begins, we want to give you the opportunity to bring joy to someone's heart this Christmas through our Hand of Hope gift catalog. To find out what you can do, visit our website at joycemeyer.org/Christmas. Now, here's Joyce with today's teaching, Living on Purpose for a Purpose.
I started working out with weights 11 years ago, and I did that 3 hours a week. It would take me an hour three times a week, and I had a trainer. Well, about a year and a half ago, I started adding walking, and I got up to 5 miles every day. And so I spend about 17 hours a week exercising. Okay, now, I'm not trying to impress you. I'm trying to make a point. Okay, before I got up here to teach this, I took an inventory of my time. How much time do I spend watching TV? How much time do I spend sleeping? How much time do I spend doing this? How much time do I spend doing that? How much time do I spend with God? And I looked at it, and I thought, okay, I'm spending 17 hours a week working out, but what am I doing with that? I'm buying years. See? I'm buying energy. I'm buying vibrancy. I'm buying the opportunity to be here a lot longer than I would be if I didn't do anything, so I can help more people and maximize the gift that God has given me.